2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits a dollar. If you're going to hell, stand up and holler. Hey, you might as well stand up because you know you're fucking getting it.
I'm live.
We are live. What do you mean you're live? We're live.
Well, I'm usually like slow. I'm usually dragging, but let me turn my Wi-Fi off my phone so it's not interrupting the flow here.
Okay.
All right. We are live.
We are live. Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another painful rendition of House of Tortured Souls Live. I'm John.
I'm not.
My partner, who is appropriately wearing his helmet today.
Because when I drink, I fall off stuff. And I'm drinking.
Welcome to everybody who will be hopefully joining our show. We got a special guest today. Alan, you want to tell us who we got today?
You got me today.
That's all we need.
We have, I should call him Steve just as an in joke with John, but... We have director, producer, writer, Scott Shermer. I hope I pronounced his name right. And I hope I got at least all of his credits. I'm pretty sure that he has done all of those things. If you don't know who that is, first of all, shame on you.
Yes.
He is the director of one of the most disturbing and original horror movies. I ain't even going to say low budget. One of the most disturbing, original, and good horror movies that I've seen in the last several years with Found.
Yes.
Then after Found went on to form Bandit Motion Pictures. I always want to throw Moon in there for some reason, but Bandit Motion Pictures with Brian Williams, I think director of photography. And with that, they did Harvest Lake, which was once again another one of those totally out of the box. I almost want to say genre redefining movies. Plank Face, and now they got the comedy Space Babes from Outer Space, which I believe Scott was actually the producer and co-writer. He can correct me when he comes on if I missed any of those, but I usually I'm totally wrong when I try to give someone's credits, but I really, really love Bandit Motion Pictures, so hopefully I got it right. Now, do we have a link so we can share so we can get some people watching this tomfoolery before Tom takes his foolery back?
There is actually a link on our Facebook page. Does have the YouTube link directly to this beautiful event.
My phone is dying, but I'm going to try to share right now.
Okay.
And we can just shoot the shit until Scott gets on. Not literally shooting shit. If anyone out there is like with the shit version of PETA that like doesn't want to like cause actual harm to shit, we've never shot actual shit. I've shot craps.
But yeah, there is always a first time for everything.
I have shot craps and I lost my pants.
And that is, ladies and gentlemen, why he has to wear the helmet today. So I'm just curious. You have a hard hat.
Yes.
Good enough.
Would you like me to wear a soft hat?
No, it's just not your everyday, ordinary, run-of-the-mill apparel that you might find at someone's home.
Could not find my fedora. I cleaned my house, and I could not find my fedora in time for the video, and I did find my fedora now, but I already had the hard hat on.
Gotcha. Well, you know, you grab the first thing you find when you come out of the shower in the afternoon. It happens.
You always protect the part of you that you care the most for. And I couldn't find my gonad shield either, so I wore the hard hat.
I
could even do Christmassy, but I thought we would do the Christmas show next week.
Get ahead for it.
Ha! Well, that wasn't even intended to be a pun, but
not really. we are presently awaiting Mr. Scott Shermer. I'll tell you what. Bandit
the motion. Last person to wear this hat was a naked porn star from Florida.
What was his name? Do you remember?
Oh, sorry. That's good. That was good. Touche.
Sorry. I had to.
Say in Germany.
Yeah. What's that?
I said touche, as they say in Germany.
Yep. Touche. Okay. Just heard from Mr. Shermer, having some technical difficulties, but he is definitely trying to join us. It does. Google, the whole internet kind of a thing is still scary to me. I still enjoy dial up, but you know, that's just me. Anything that moves faster than I can. Yeah. I'm kind of worried about that. And that's scary too, because I work for a cable company locally here in Maryland. And, you think I'd be a little bit more prone and knowing, a little bit more knowledgeable. Nope. If it wasn't for having kids in the house, middle school through high school era, I'd be a kid. I am not good with.
I'm good with certain aspects of the internet. Like if I want to find someone or something, I can track your ass down on the internet and find out if you're real or not, and stuff like that. Cause yeah, handy skill. But I'm not technical. I can't fix a computer other than I kick it, I hit it, I throw it. If it doesn't work, I don't know what to do after that. And I ask for advice and it's like, go to your tech friends. Right. I'm my tech friend. Everyone around me knows less about computers than I do, and I know shit. And I get that at work all the time. It's like, oh, you're so technologically good. I'm not. Whoa, there's a giant head on my screen.
I think I figured this out.
Hey,
you can see and hear me.
Who's that guy?
I can't see or hear you.
Scott Shermer, how are you?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
Doing well, Scott. This is my partner in crime, Mr. Alan Alberson. Alan, obviously, you know Mr. Scott Shermer.
I know him too on Facebook.
There you go.
Yes, and we met once at Horror Hound this year.
Groovy.
Scott, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. This is an honor to have you. Wow, we've been wanting and talking about trying to track down between you and Brian, Ellie, any of you guys. This is an honor to have you in our shop today. We really appreciate you taking the time for us.
It ain't hard, man. We're whores for any kind of press, so all you have to do is ask. And we'll usually be more than happy to talk about whatever we're selling.
We're just whores. There's no adjective or adverb, whatever it is. We're just whores.
Just whores. Yeah.
So
adult show. So adult beverages.
Yeah. Well, I got tea in a Gremlin's glass.
That's adult for me. Anything is.
Royal Farms leftover Coke from I think last night. You know, I'm cheap like that. So, hey, I appreciate you taking the time today. I hope you're not interrupting your mid-Saturday afternoon.
No, I ain't got a life, man. Right now, things are pretty slow, so it's good.
I hear you.
Well, I notice you've got quite a little collection sitting behind you, Fright Night poster, all kinds of groovy-looking toys and everything. Man, you've got quite the little collection there. That is impressive. I like that.
Yeah, I'm a nerd just like anybody.
There you go. There you go.
I just surround myself with little knickknacks from the past.
Well, hey.
Cushing. If you hear a shriek all of a sudden, it'll be him.
I have seen Cushing on Facebook before. He is adorable.
He's sweet. Mostly. Well, hey, there's things he doesn't like that can set him off, like something bright yellow or the right shade of red, he'll just bite the shit out of me. I have marks up and down my arms. I look like a heroin addict because that's what he does. He just bites me. Trading cards. We put trading cards and Space Babes and Plank Face. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. He hates trading cards for some reason. I cannot touch a trading card of any kind or he will run down my arms and bite the shit out of me. Take a chunk out of my skin. Damn. But you just have to know all the things he doesn't like. He doesn't like ice cream. I can't eat ice cream. I can't eat strawberries. Oh, wow. It's very strange. Tissue paper. If I touch it, I have to let go really quick. If I touch it for very long, he'll get really mad. It's weird.
Quit Birds are weird animals.
Yeah, they're sweet, though.
They are, and they're fairly intelligent. I mean, maybe it's a reason he doesn't like them. Maybe tissue paper is like some alien life force trying to take over our world, and only Cushing knows about it.
Maybe. Is that right? Are you trying to protect us?
I'm saving humanity, and all I get is scolded. So, what are y'all's plans? I know Space Babe's just come out, so I assume you're kind of, I don't want to say relaxing, because I don't think independent filmmakers ever really relax, but do you have another project in mind or in some form of, not production, but pre-production? Are you thinking about doing anything?
I'm thinking about it, and every other day it changes. So I'm waiting until like a whole week goes by where I'm like, every day that week, I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do next. Because I want to do The Bad Man, but The Bad Man, I'm afraid its time may have passed. So I don't know if I really want to do The Bad Man. So it could happen. The only things that are for sure, there's a short film I'm going to direct in September for someone that I can't really talk about because I don't know what they want people to know yet. But that's just something I'm doing for some friends of mine. Yeah. And then Smut, the movie, is going to be Arthur Culliver's next movie. He directed Headless that I co-produced, and I'm helping him produce that movie. So I know that's going to happen. It'll probably be finished next spring, but we have a special effects meeting tonight for that. It's full of creatures. It's going to take so long to get that thing done. And we're going to do a fundraiser for that in September, trying to sell Headless merchandise to raise enough money to pay for all of the materials needed to make all the creatures for Smut. So those are the things I know that are happening. I would love to direct another movie, but I just don't know how soon I want to do that yet.
Where did you come up with the last couple of years, you guys, Bandit Motion Picture, you guys have just been on a roll. Was this just one night you guys are sitting around and all of a sudden you thought of this movie, that movie, this movie, and just nonstop, just nailed everything? Or, I mean, obviously I know you took time in between, but I mean, you guys are just bam, bam, bam. I mean, you guys were nonstop. Congratulations first on the success of everything, because the movies, from a fan's point of view, media-wise, seem to have gone over really, really well. The audience responses seem to just absolutely love everything that you guys are pushing out. And so congratulations with everything, by the way. Your movies are great. I know between Alan and I, we are both big fans of Bandit Motion Pictures. Found, I think, was actually probably one of the first movies that I actually wrote a review for House of Tortured Souls. And that film just inspired me to. It had such a profound effect, and wow, what a movie. The longevity of everything, just congratulations on everything, but I just don't know where you guys came up with the brainstorms, the constant energy, and then to also be that active on social media to be able to keep pushing all of your product and so forth the way you guys have been doing. I just don't know how much sleep you guys could have gotten over the last 2-3 years.
It's crazy because it really was a conscious decision on my part. I left a full-time day job where I was making twice as much as I'm making now, just to pursue this dream. We got an offer, Forbidden Films, because I'm a part of Forbidden Films and Bandit Motion Pictures. Forbidden Films is the company I'm in with Arthur Culliver, Leah Taylor, and Shane Beasley, and Bandit Motion Pictures is me and Brian. But we got an offer at Forbidden Films to do The Legend of Wasco. Somebody already had sold a Killer Clown movie, and they needed a movie to put in Redbox that fall, like 4 months later. So I decided with the money I would be getting to do that, plus whatever Found revenue I was expecting, I could quit that job. I never saw any of that found money, though, I'll tell you that.
Oh, wow.
So we skated by on the money from the clown movie, and right after we were finished shooting that, Brian was the director of photography on that. He and I decided to make Harvest Lake, and we did that very quickly. We just came up with that story out of nowhere. And after that one, we did Plank Face the same way. We tried to do the Batman again in between those projects, and it fell apart. So then we were like, well, let's pull another movie out of our ass and see what we can come up with. And Plank Face, we were actually pretty proud of. And it worked out really well. And then we went directly into Space Base from Outer Space. So in the last 2 years, I've made 4 movies. And in a little under 3 years, I've made 5 movies, if you count Headless. So right. We are exhausted. Brian was so exhausted. He left Indiana. He went to Atlanta. And right. He does not know if he wants to make another movie. And I'm a little bit in the same place, to be honest. It's very hard to make a movie on your own. So
yeah.
With the two of us committed full time, dedicated day and night, every day, working harder than we ever worked at day jobs, it was possible. But it's very hard to find people, because most people have no idea what goes into all this. It really is exhausting.
No, I can only imagine. That's amazing.
I followed you guys on Facebook, and between you and Brian, you go into a lot of detail about what you're going through, not so much into the filming, but like after it's over, like, well, today I'm pressing this disc, or I'm track, or I'm working on the audio, and I'm like, wow, this is stuff. And it's not like the big Hollywood movie where you go out, you film it, and then you hand it over to these people and you come in once a week to check and see what they're doing. This is you, Brian, Ellie, and
that's it.
Support team y'all might have sitting there doing the grunge work. I mean, you know, I actually picture you sitting in your house pressing DVDs one by one in this little machine and putting them in cases.
That's one of the only things we don't do. We do have those professionally replicated at some plant somewhere.
I hoped you weren't quite at that level, but in my mind, though, because you're like, oh, well, we're pressing, we're getting them risk. I'm like, man, they're sitting there in their house, like pressing those out in like a little waffle iron thing, making the disc. I'm like, wow, that's cool. But
no, yeah, we're different. We're different from a lot of the people that we know, because we do. Brian and I are I don't know very many other people who can write, produce, direct, shoot, and edit. It's very hard to find someone who can do those things. I know a lot of directors out there can't really get work because all they really do is direct. They have no idea how to pick up a camera or edit anything. So they are completely dependent on someone writing them a story and financing it and giving them a job, basically. Someone like that's basically like an actor waiting to get a job, or a music composer waiting to get a job. But we are able to instigate a project and execute it and market it and distribute it. That's the only way I can see this really working for people moving forward, because the opportunities are getting fewer and fewer.
That's insane.
You know, I watched and was watching through the credits this morning, actually, of Space Base from Outer Space, which, thank you very much. Enjoyed it thoroughly. Good movie. But I'm watching the ending credits after the cast rolls by, and I'm seeing between you and Brian and Ellie's name, how many times of how much stuff you guys actually do in a production of. It's not just written by or directed by, you know, it's Titty City, the model.
Ellie did that.
Ellie. And the sound and this and that. And, I mean, I tip my hat to you guys. You guys are not just Bandit Motion Pictures. You guys are hands-on Bandit Motion Pictures. You know, some guys, you know, you got the suit and the tie. Yeah, I'm the company. Now I'm going to go hire and pay someone else to go produce it and do the sound and mix it and edit it. That's you guys all around. I mean, wow.
Seriously, part of it's out of necessity, because with our movies have all cost around $8,000. And with that much, you can afford to pay some of your cast and a sound guy. And that's about it. You can't really afford to pay a whole lot of crew. So part of it's out of necessity, and part of it's just because Brian and I are both control freaks, and we don't like to give up any control unless we feel like the person's absolutely competent. And we have not, I mean, it sounds arrogant, but we just haven't found very many people that we trust to do a job better than we think we could do. So that's one of the other reasons we do it all like that.
Well, you know what your vision is, you know how you want it, you know what you want done. So, I mean, I can definitely respect the part of being leery about giving that aspect to someone else and then saying, no, that's shit. I get out of my store. I'm going to do it. And then I have to redo it all over again. Yeah. With your actual, you know, with your vision there.
Plus, we love editing. That's the one thing that most people wouldn't do in our situation. But that's just so that's where the movie's made. Like, I shoot the movie so that I can edit the movie. Making a movie is just me. It's a solitary experience for me. Working with actors can be fun if I like the actors. Unfortunately, I usually do. But it's so hard to make a movie when you're in production. I don't have time to enjoy it. I don't have time. I'm very serious most of the time. And I only enjoy it like after the fact. I'm like, oh, wow, I remember we shot that. But that was probably pretty fun if I would have just taken a minute to like let it be. Right. So production is just a war you have to get through. It's when I'm at a computer and I can work on editing the picture and the sound and getting the music in there. That is the entire joy of filmmaking for me. And writing to some extent. I like the solitary parts of it more than I like the collaborative parts of it. But fortunately, we've been able to get a lot of actors and some crew together that are like family now that help to make the production part a lot more fun than it might be otherwise.
Sure, sure. No, I can appreciate that, definitely. Alan, I'm sorry. I think I cut you off a couple minutes ago. You were wanting to add something there.
I can't remember what it is, so I'll just make up something else and add it. But the editing really is where the magic happens.
Yeah.
I got lucky. I had a friend who's a director show me a work print, and it's so much different from that finished project. It was just really rough, and it wasn't the complete out of the camera, but still without the sound, without a lot of the effects, it's such a different film that the editing is where a film is made. I hate editing people myself, but I also hate editing videos, audio. I'm no good at video. I hate editing audio, but I'm halfway decent at it, and that is where you really get your good quality. Otherwise, it's just people talking. But when you can go in there and maybe fix the sound quality, add some little effects at the end and the beginning, that's where it really turns into something fun. But it is work too. It comes
to life with sound editing.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was doing my own podcast solo, I would usually listen to it 5 times before I ever uploaded it, and I could never stand to listen to it again.
Yeah.
Never want to hear it again because I'd already heard it like 5 times all the way through trying to get it right. And I was a control freak too because I started out wanting to do it, and I never asked anyone any advice. I Googled stuff. I put stuff. I tried stuff. It sounded horrible. I tried something different. Sometimes I lucked out and got magic that I could never get again. It's frustrating, it's tiring, but it's also when you do hit that magic spot, it's really, really fulfilling.
Yeah.
It's really fun. Yeah.
That's when it comes to life. I remember Brian in particular, he was kind of despondent about Space Babes for a little while after it was shot, because when you're editing a comedy, you forget all the jokes. You take for granted all of the stuff that you planted a long time ago. You don't know whether that's going to really work. You don't know because the jokes aren't funny to you anymore after shooting it and editing it, right? So you don't know what the hell you're watching at that point when you're editing the movie. And I remember as sound effects would go into the movie and score would go into the movie and songs, it would become a whole new thing. And he'd be like, oh my God, yeah, this is what we did. He couldn't even recognize what we did until it had those sound elements in particular incorporated. Have you guys seen that documentary about the making of Star Wars, Empire of Dreams, I think it was called?
I have not. I have not.
Small bits and pieces throughout, yes.
The most compelling thing I ever saw about the power of editing is in that documentary, because they had one editor put together an assembly of A New Hope, Star Wars. I hate calling it A New Hope. Star Wars, the 1977 original. And the people didn't like the movie. And they show the way the scene was cut together originally of when Obi-Wan Kenobi attacks the person at the cantina and cuts his arm off. And then they show what that scene was like with some other editors putting it together. And the difference is as dramatic as anything I've ever seen. So anyone that wants to know like the power of film editing, watch Empire of Dreams and look for that part where they show the way that scene was cut two different times. You cannot believe your eyes. And it's the same footage. Wow. They didn't, I don't think they reshot anything for that.
It's amazing. It's amazing how a different angle can change it.
Yep.
Yeah. I remember I had just gotten done actually watching Harvest Lake. And it was kind of late at night and my wife was asleep. So I'm at the computer and I've got my headphones on. And I had told Alan, because he was getting ready to watch his copy of it, I think a couple days later, he just received his in the mail. And I said, dude, wear headphones. And I commented on that with Brian's name online. There was times in that movie that I just fell into a trance. The slightest sounds in the background that you might not have caught on TV, perhaps, but with the headphones on, I was just mesmerized. I really was. And Brian saw that comment and liked it, which I was glad that he did, because I really wanted to. I wanted him to know just how powerful that was. And, you know, going back through sound editing and stuff like that, it can really, you know, there's some movies that just lay flat. And then you build up with, you know, with certain background sounds and angles like you're talking about, and it really brings everything to life and can really put that much more emphasis or power and just drives you over the, you know, sitting on the edge of your seat while you're watching parts of this stuff. It's really good stuff.
It really adds an immersive quality, especially to Harvest Lake and to most films, but especially Harvest Lake, when you, and with the headphones on, that score just really sucked me in until I almost felt like I was there, until I tried to grab Tristan's ass and just grab my screen, and I realized I wasn't actually there.
That's cool. Yeah, I'm really proud of how that one turned out. We always wanted it to be kind of hypnotic and trance-like. And we're glad that some people get it, and we knew that some people wouldn't, and they don't. But it's been pretty well received for an experiment. That's really how we went into that one. Just let's just do it, and who cares if people like it or not?
Well, it was definitely different, and I hate say genre redefining or genre vending, because I think that is so. But the movie was just I never seen anything exactly like that before. It brought to mind Cronenberg in a lot of ways than Berg. I think there were a lot of things that reminded me of the body horror type, but then it was different. I had never seen anything like it.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think Found is still my favorite film you've been involved with, because that one just blew me away so much. And I was talking to my friend the other day, and she said it was the best film she had ever seen at a film festival. And if she had not have seen it and loved it, I might have never discovered it, because she suggested it to me. I think I got it on VOD and then found it at Walmart for $9.99. And I'm sorry that none of that went to you.
Not very much anyway. But they gave us an advance. That was it. Yeah, the company that made the DVDs for Found went bankrupt. And so the distributor that we made the deal with isn't getting the money from the DVD sales. And so we're not getting any money from DVD sales. And since they're not getting money from DVD sales, they're also not going to give us the streaming and VOD money. So Found was just an absolute I have never heard a good distribution story. So I really don't like overseas distributions. They're honest with you. They'll say, I will give you $1,000 or $2,000. That's all we can afford, and that's all you're ever going to get. And I'm like, you know what? That's fine. But here in North America, they lie to you. They tell you, oh, this could make 50 or 100, 150,000. You're from day one, right off the top. And they're just full of lies. I don't know anybody that makes any money on North American distribution.
I've heard nothing but fool to take them.
Yeah. Keep your movie in North America. Keep it. Do it yourself.
Who was it, Alan? We spoke with Billy Pond, and he says the exact same thing. He sat on Circus of the Dead for over 2 years, waiting to find someone that he could actually shake hands with and that would look him in the eyes when they did that. There was no trust whatsoever, and that's sad, because you guys have got so much creativity, so much original thought, and so much brilliant film to offer to us. And it's a shame that, you know, once, quote unquote, I'm going to use the term Hollywood, wants to get their hands into it. It's a shame. Well, yeah. And it makes me ask, you know, stuff like, all right, like Found, you obviously had that left a very, very bad taste in your mouth with that. Is there any way you could ever, I know this would be a big financial chunk for you, be able to do a remastered version or director's cut and actually do it on your own or with somebody else? That way you could hopefully reap new benefits out of it possibly in the future.
Well, I wrote the company last year and I said, look, you guys have told me point blank, I'm never going to see a dime from this deal. So how am I ever going to profit from this money, from this movie? I mean, you guys have to give me something. And so they gave me the right to make Blu-rays because they didn't make Blu-rays. So we have a Blu-ray available now and we're allowed to sell it as long as we don't sell it wherever their DVD is being sold.
So, really? Well, I'll tell you what, Scott, if you want to run that through my website with a direct link back to it, Alan and I would be full supporters of you, and I can guarantee you that they would not be selling anything on my site because that's bullshit. I mean, even for the artist to put the work forth and not actually get anything off of it. So if that's something you would ever consider, I will build up the link over the course of the weekend. We'll get that set up for you and help you out.
Yeah, man, I'm a whore. I'll give you a link.
if it's something like that.
I'll give you a link and reach around.
I might hold you to it on the weekend, my friend.
He's got long arms. He gives himself reach around so he doesn't feel lonely.
Oh, I feel you.
Hey, tell us, I mean, Bandit Motion Pictures swept, just kind of like took over, like I said, over the last couple of years. Take us from the birth of, if you can, you know, you and Brian and the union between you guys and to where you guys are now, which also leads me up to, I know you had mentioned, you know, that you and Brian are tired, obviously, and the possibility of him saying, you know, I don't even know if I want to make another film, and you possibly saying, I don't know if I want to get behind the camera again. So where, what would that lead Bandit Motion Pictures to? And then also, what would that course be, where would Brian end up going if he didn't, and where would Scott end up being if he didn't?
Man, I don't know. I don't like to talk for Brian because it's, you know, I don't like to talk for anybody, but Brian is also interested in music,
right?
And I mean, hell, he decided to, Brian's a weird guy that when he decides he wants to do something, he just plunges head first into it and tries his best to master it. I mean, he did that with, I think, Auto Mechanics at one point. I could be wrong. I could be wrong about that. He did it with making whiskey or beer or something. He was like making moonshine or some shit and got really good at it at one point.
I could do that.
And then he decided he wanted to be a cinematographer, and he just wanted to learn everything he could about it and do the best he could, and he got really far. And I think he might be to the point where he's going to do a 180 and figure out something else. I don't know. He just needed to get away and figure it out and go to the mountaintop and listen to the wind or something. Right. And I don't know what else I could do.
Usually people farting, just if he hasn't figured that out yet.
The colors of the wind. The colors of the wind are all brown. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've really been struggling the last month or so trying to figure it out because I really want to make a movie, but I know how hard it's going to be.
Right.
So I just don't know. I have no other skills. I have a lot of confidence about filmmaking. I have a lot of people say I'm arrogant about it, but I just have a lot of confidence that I know what I'm doing in that one aspect of my life. I have no clue what I'm doing anywhere else in life. I've let everything else go. I can't cook for myself. I don't clean. I have like two pairs of pants. I don't wear, I don't know fashion. I don't buy clothes. I can't take care of myself in any way, but I love to make movies and I'm stupid about everything but movies. So if I don't do that, I don't know what else I'm going to do. So hopefully I'll find a way to keep doing it.
Well, I vote for movies, so I hope you do find a way. And I just want to say, and your films are some of the most transgressive in a sexual way of any films out there in the independent or major films.
Yeah.
Since Found. I mean, the scene in Found, and it was not, the sexual aspect of Found was not visually graphic. you know exactly what is happening and how shocking that was. And then on to Harvest Moon. Harvest Moon. Isn't that some Japanese anime or something? Or no, it's a Neil Young song. It's a Neil Young song.
Neil Young.
Harvest Lake. It's the first thing I've flubbed today, so I'm good. Harvest Lake with the plant sex, and also showing a homosexual relationship on a film in a way that was not played for shock or value, but showed realistically, which is still transgressive to the major Hollywood films. Yeah. And then on to Plank Face, which I did call by the wrong name, but on the Plank Face, where you basically have a male being raped by a group of females, which is also something that's totally outside the box. Do you push for that transgressive sex in the films? Does it just seem to flow naturally, or is it something you look for as a shock?
It's not at all for shock. There are plenty of people out there that start with the intent to just shock people, and I don't think it's hard to do. You can just kill a puppy on screen and you'll shock people. But I try to earn whatever shock I may get from an audience by making the movie about something. So while it may shock you, the movie's also trying to tell you what that's all about. It's not just, hey, I'm shocking you, and then it forgets and it's on to something else. Yeah. The whole movie is about that. Like in Found, the boner, the hell boner that Steve has at the end of that movie, some people have accused that of being for shock value, and I can understand why they might think that, because it's really speaking to the subtext of the movie, which since it's subtext, we don't talk about in the open anywhere else in the movie, and that's the fact that he's not killing because he's racist. He's killing because he gets off on it. Right. That's the whole motivation. The scary thing about Found is the suggestion that male sexuality is intrinsically monstrous. And I believe that to an extent. I think we're noble human creatures that know better. We know right from wrong, but I believe we have very dark, disturbing instincts in us that a lot of us wrestle with from time to time. So that's what I'm trying to do, is just what scares me. What can I tell us? What kind of horror movie? Quit screaming over me. What kind of horror, what can I make that would make my horror movies distinct? That's what it's all about. Because I'm not, so many other filmmakers, especially when I was getting started, they were making Kevin Smith ripoffs and Quentin Tarantino ripoffs, and I'm like, oh come on guys, you got to find your own voice. And I went through a period where like, what is my voice? What can I talk about? What do I have any kind of experience with? And I think just being a gay guy growing up and having experiences of being isolated from people that way, I was able to look at things different. I took a lot of sex and gender classes at IU where I went to college. And so I felt like that was somewhere where I could try and infuse that. Plus, I don't think human beings are scared of there are two things, sex and death. That's like not only what we're scared of, but it's like what makes the world go around. Like sex and death are everything. If you make a movie about sex or death, then you're making a movie about everything. It's all in there. And I think sex right now is such a potent topic to keep making movies about, because I firmly believe about half the people, at least in this country, are terrified of it. They're so scared to look between their legs or between the legs of other people and come to grips with what's there. They're so sexually repressed that it manifests and makes them sick in some way. They do never, bad things out of sexual repression. It's not a good thing.
I never thought of that before, but it's like our greatest joy, that thing we're all driven to. But it is our greatest fear, because what's the worst thing that most people could think of happening to them, even worse than death? Being raped. It's like this horrible, transgressive, evil thing. But then what is that great thing that we all, when we hit, 12, 13, 14, whatever the age now, when we start hitting puberty, that we're driven to for a good time. So it's like opposites in one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it separates human beings, men and women, so much. I find the differences between men and women is fascinating as like the stars. Other people find the universe interesting. I'm just interested in dudes and chicks and how they go about their lives. It's pretty interesting.
It really is.
How is it filming? Is it awkward filming sex scenes?
It hasn't ever been for me yet. Okay. So I don't know if it's just because I'm lucky or because we've usually known the people that are cast well enough to where it's not weird to them. It would only be weird to me if it was weird to them, I think. So I just try to cast people that I know it's not going to be weird for. I didn't know Ethan Philbeck that played the guy in Found, but as soon as he auditioned, I said, if we do cast you, there's this scene where we're going to put a fake cock on you, and you're basically going to have to like tuck yourself like a drag queen, and Arthur's going to put this big boner on you, and you're going to have to, that's in the movie, you're going to have to do that. And he talked to his dad about it, and he and his dad read the script, and they both decided, okay, this is fine, you should do this, this is a good thing. Thank God. We let him know ahead of time, and he was so cool and so zen the night we shot that I really appreciate it, because that makes my job so much better.
9 out of every 10 online top 10 most disturbing Found is in there.
I've seen it in some, yeah.
How hard was that to film, being as the entire scene is off screen? It's all a mental image in your head of sound. How hard was it for the actors, you know, to do something without being, they don't physically have to show what they're doing, but they did.
Yeah.
How hard was that to be able to come across? Did it take a while to be able to get it just done the way you wanted it? Was it a lot of it, and then editing this sound to that piece and this and that? I mean, wow, what a scene. But I'm just wondering, how hard was that to film when it wasn't on film?
I thought a lot about showing some things, and ultimately decided with the whole movie, perspective is important. And I think there's a lot of movies today that I really don't appreciate because they don't stay true to a certain perspective.
Sure.
I'm going off on a tangent, but whenever you have the camera behind bombs and you're watching the bombs go down, you lose me a little bit, because I'm like, why are we in the perspective of the fucking bomb? That's not something I really appreciate. Stay with the perspective of the human beings in the movie. But anyway, with that movie, I decided we have to stay with Marty the whole time, and Marty's not able to see a whole lot.
Right.
So that's how I made that decision. And in terms of how hard it was to shoot, it was really a matter of, we had one day of shooting with Ethan, who's nude in the gas mask with a big giant prosthetic wiener. That was a weird night of shooting, especially since the power went out.
Oh,
all across town we're shooting, and no, the power went out that night. It was, I thought maybe it was divine intervention or something. I don't know. That was a weird night, and we got through that. And the other part of shooting that scene, there are three parts. The second part was shooting Gavin, the little boy who's tied to the bed, hearing everything and crying. And that was just a matter of, let's just put the camera on Gavin and make him cry. So it was, I just shot, okay, they're doing this to your mom, they're doing this to your dad now. And I'd try and shut up and talk him through it as much as possible, but also be quiet long enough so that I could get good sound on the crying. So I had a bunch of him crying, and I had all of what Ethan did. And then a few months before the movie was finished, I got the people who played the mom and the dad to come to my house and go to my laundry room, and we recorded them screaming and dying and doing whatever they did. And that was awkward. That was very hard for them, because you're just sitting in next to my washer and dryer, and it's like, okay, Phyllis, you're being raped. All right, your son is raping you.
Son is raping you, though.
Your head's being cut off now. So they're... What you need is fearlessness in actors that are willing to go the distance for things like that. And I tried my best to get those kinds of people involved in that project. And then editing took me 6 months on Found. That movie had more footage than any movie I've ever had and probably will ever have, mostly because with kids, you just have to keep shooting until you get what the hell you need.
Right.
Gavin was the kind of actor that you had to do 20 takes before he'd give you one that was what you wanted. Right. Occasionally, he'd give you a good take on the first one, and then nothing else would be good. It was weird. It was weird. So editing also really helped pull that together.
Well, job well done. Congratulations on that.
But also Todd Rigney, man. When it comes to Found, Todd Rigney wrote that story. And without Todd's story, there's nothing else that matters with that movie as well. I mean, since it was my first movie, I think it's my least polished. And I think a lot of people are able to forgive the rough edges in the execution. And maybe some of the supporting performances aren't the best. But people, and the sound quality is not very good, because shit, we didn't even have a sound man. There were literally days we just threw the sound recorder on the ground and prayed for the best. I can't believe we even got that movie distributed, because the sound is just not that good. But people are willing to forgive it because Todd's story is so strong. And that's how I felt when I read it. I wanted to make that into a movie more than anything because his storytelling was so strong.
It's almost a coming-of-age film, and then it just goes to these extreme, even at the point where he finds the head in the closet, it's still like, oh, well, it's still a coming-of-age movie. It's just a little weird. And then those last, 15 minutes, it's the coming-of-age movie that just went to hell and fucked the devil in the ass and ran off laughing. It's
you should have written that in a review. We could have put that in a trailer or something. Found fucks the devil in the ass and runs off laughing. That would have been cool.
It really would have. I think I've got a review of it somewhere on one of my sites. But so do you want to tell us a little bit about Space Babe, since I know that's your the latest film from Bandit, and I know y'all guys are, I guess, still have copies for sale. So you want to tell us a little bit about it? It is a comedy, which is kind of a different type of film than you're known for. I guess some people could laugh at Found, but I don't want to know those people.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be weird. I'm not a funny person, so this was really Brian's baby. After we finished Plank Face, we just had what we were getting used to at the time was, well, what's next? When we talk about it. And I encouraged him to do it because it's a project he's been wanting to do for a long time, but he had a very particular way that he wanted to do it. It was originally supposed to be much more like Amazon Women on the Moon, something like some anthology like that, parodies. And I told him, well, it's called Space Babes from Outer Space. You've got sexy ladies that come down and land on Earth. If you don't do it, the Amazon Women on the Moon, which would have taken forever for us to shoot, if you can find a way to make it a narrative more traditional, I think it's by far the most commercial thing that we could do right now. And since we're trying to survive, commercial is not a bad goal. So we hashed it out and came up with a bare bones narrative for a new version of Space Babes. And then he went off and wrote it in couple of weeks, maybe. We're both kind of fast writers when we know what we're doing. And then it was just a matter of who's going to play the babes and getting a strip club. We got the strip club before we even finished the script, because if we couldn't get a strip club, there's no point in making that movie. It's all in a strip club. So it's mostly Brian's thing. I had to really trust Brian's instincts on the comedy, because there were a lot of times I'd be like, dude, is this funny? Like, I remember when we shot the scene where Jason Crow's in the men's room at the strip club and our main character, Brian Papandrea plays, comes in and vomits all over him. Yep. And Shane Beasley's there shooting the vomit out of a hose. And that just happened. And the vomit splattered all over the floor and got over everything. And I'm like, this is funny? Because it was gross. It was gross as fuck. It's still, when I look at it, it's kind of gross as fuck. But it gets a nice out of the audience.
Well, what made that?
I don't know what's funny, so I had to trust Brian.
Facial expressions, in my opinion. Yeah, I mean, because he was having a bad day at the strip club of all that stuff happening to him, and when he walked in, turned around, and the guy threw up on him, his facial expression was just like, really?
I'm used to it. it was funny.
It did come across. It was so. It did work. Yes, it really did.
Yeah, Crow's a funny guy. He makes some great faces.
Yeah,
he's good. I haven't seen it yet, and that is the only one of the Bandit Moon film. Bandit. I'm stuck on this fucking moon for some reason. Bandit Moon. Everything has a moon in it today. God. It's the only film that I didn't get during the Indiegogo, and I wanted to, and I just could not. It's one of those things where you're like, you have to be an adult because, you know, you just wrecked your fucking car and you're broke.
Yeah.
So you can't be buying movies.
I know.
But just from watching the clips, and of course I saw the trailer with Alice for the strip club game, and the movie, before I get off on Alice, which will like sidetrack me for the entire day, thinking about that clip, it reminds me a lot of the sex comedies from, I guess, like the early 80s that used to, like, I would the video place, and some of them weren't, I know there was some Scandinavian films. They did a lot of those with the girls, and they're in a ski resort, or they're aliens, or they're adventurers. And it really has that feel. And I hope that's what Brian was going for, because it looks like that's what y'all hit. And I definitely am going to get a copy, because I like I said, it looks hilarious to me, and also kind of nostalgic for that moment when I, you know, now I'm an adult and I can go out and buy sex comedies and be disappointed in them. And, but back, you know, back, that wonderful feeling of like sneaking out and watching one in the back room, or like your dad screams, "What are you watching?" A documentary on skiing.
Yeah, that's, you know, a lot. No, we both love sex comedies. As soon as Brian and I were working on Wasco together, we were talking about how much we both liked sex comedies and how I couldn't ever write one, but I'd love to direct or produce one just because I like them. So we always kind of knew that we might make one, and the opportunity finally came. And Brian is a big fan. He's seen just about every sex comedy, I think, that's out there. And he was very, very, very consciously trying to pattern, trying to create feelings in the audience that they might have had when they watched Splash or Screwballs or Porky's or any of those kinds of movies. The Last American Virgin was one we both just saw recently and really liked. Well, it's a great genre, and I even like the American Pie movies. I think he did too. But they got mean-spirited, and they turned more, I don't know, millennials happen. I like to blame millennials for everything that I don't like about the world. But millennials and sex comedies don't seem to go together very much anymore. So millennials killed the genre, and we tried to bring it back.
Yeah, it was all, but I remember back then, everything, at least in my sometimes rose-colored glasses I use looking back at movies in the 80s, everything seemed to be more of a fun, lighthearted, nobody really got hurt beyond maybe getting a wedgie or a swirly. And now there is kind of a viciousness in a lot of them nowadays, which is strange. And it doesn't feel the same. It's not the same. It's not as fun.
Yeah. It was cheeky before, and that was considered to be risque. And now it's like, I don't know what happened to it, but they really did become mean, too mean.
Yeah.
And everybody's so politically correct nowadays that they're afraid to really talk about the differences between men and women in any kind of way that might ever be construed by any single person on earth as offensive. So you could fart in the wind and offend someone. So if you're afraid to offend people, you really can't make sex comedies anymore at all.
I get that. And I'm one of the most progressive people you would meet in so many ways. And I'm afraid to talk because I'm like, well, am I going to say a word that is no longer okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then be completely shamed and ran off of Twitter or Facebook.
Yeah, it's a hostile environment. We talked about that when we did Space Babes because we knew that it could potentially get us in trouble. The thing I was most worried about was mansplaining, because the Space Babes, if once you see the movie, they get mansplained the whole movie because they're aliens.
Right.
They've never been around a human male. They have no idea what's happening. But I was pretty sure that we'd get attacked by saying this whole movie is about mansplaining to women. But no one said that yet. But I'm sure some people are thinking it, and I don't give a shit. I just don't give a shit.
There you go.
Yeah. How is it hard? And I don't want to start any arguments, so cut me off if
yes, it does.
I'm leaning that way. You and Brian have had a tight, close working partnership now, and Brian has his wife. And how can I put it? I wouldn't want to have to work with my wife and my best friend all in the same time, and then go home with all of them at the same time. Is there any?
Well, he never went home with me. No,
John, we're together a lot.
I don't know. I mean, having a close knit partnership, I think, is great. I really do, because you guys seem to really feed off of each other, and it works. The products work great. Is there any? Does it too much time together? Tension build up. Does that kind of make sense, though?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, we would get into arguments, and they would – I mean, my God. I mean, I wish someone was filming it at the time, because we argued about everything, but I think it's one of the reasons the movies are as good as they are, and I'm proud of them, and I'm going to go ahead and say that. I think they're very good. I'm proud of all of them, except for the Killer Clown movie, but that was a different circumstance. But they're as good as they are because we vetted every possible – option, every angle, every casting decision. We would have some really heated arguments about casting on some of these movies. Titles of the movies we would argue about for weeks. Plank Face, my God. That might be our biggest argument, was the title of Plank Face, because Brian could not stand that title. And I didn't love it at the time, but we couldn't come up with a better title. So, and they would get bad sometimes. And Brian... Brian and I are both stubborn. I think if someone was outside, an outside observer would say we're both stubborn. We both think we know everything. We both know what we want. And but at the same time, we very much appreciate each other's input. And we just struck a balance. But there were, yes, absolutely times that were ugly. And I think the thing, honestly, between him and me at right now moving forward would be that I don't think he really wants to make horror movies.
Okay.
I suspect he really wants to keep making more movies like Space Babes, and I don't think I could keep doing that. So yeah. If we were moving forward, I think we'd have to find a new balance of how many movies out of 10 are going to be booby movies. Because right. If it's just Brian, all 10 are going to be booby movies, I can guarantee you.
And, I like Brian.
Yeah, I know you do. I like to put boobs in all my movies as insurance, you know, because if the movie doesn't interest you, oh, there's boobs. The boobs will interest you again. You
boobs know? Always
it's just,
sell.
It's yes, just how it works.
They yeah, do. They wake me up. I can be falling asleep and left the movie playing, and when boobs flash on the screen, I wake up. I don't even know why. It's kind of like when, like, Paul or God or whatever, it's like, there are boobs somewhere around me.
Just on the other side of that wall, man. Boobs.
They're always just on the other side of something.
Yeah. It's sex. We're visually driven. We're visually compelled by things. And it's just insurance to make sure that, you know, I understand you don't want ugly people. Well, you want the best actors you can. And I know that Hollywood likes to cast all these dumb WBCW 16-year-old waifs that are totally talentless. I don't want that. But at the same time, you are asking me to spend money to sit for 2 hours. I don't want to, you know, watch ugly people for 2 hours. They can be good looking. I'm okay with that little bit of suspension.
That's why Amish porn never took off. That's the only reason.
Amish porn, not popular.
You're okay with the wood.
You could just sell them blank videotapes, really, because they don't have electricity to watch to use the VCR anyway. Maybe it's a good idea. I don't know.
I always tell people I like to watch deaf mute porn so I can see them screaming and yelling in sign language during the act. You know, it's like, oh my God.
Something tells me they don't really do that.
Probably not.
But I've never had sex with a deaf mute person to find out. So.
I don't even know how they would do that in Braille for the blind people who went to see. I'm like, oh, look, deaf mute porn. Let's go.
Oh, God.
See it. I'm getting hate mail now already. So he said blind people are going to see a movie.
Scott,
they do, though.
Who inspires you?
What inspires me?
Who inspires you? As far as like growing up, who, you know, writers, directors, who was it that wanted you, that you watched growing up that made you want to do what you are doing today?
Mercer Mayer did a lot of those little monster books, but those weren't the ones I liked. All the non-little monster books I loved because they were so beautiful. But really the big inspiration was George Lucas and Steven Spielberg because I was born in 74. So I was at 6, Empire Strikes Back came out, and God, then Indiana Jones. I grew up in the 80s. So Spielberg and Lucas were my idols for the longest time. And I think Robert Zemeckis became one as in junior high and high school. Big Back to the Future fan at the time. Gremlins was enormous for me. Yeah. The first Batman was a very important movie to me. Oh, yeah. Peter Weir's movies. He was the first serious director I really fell in love with was Peter Weir because of Dead Poets Society. That movie just affected me so greatly that I kind of stuck. I latched on to him and ended up watching everything he did. And I finally got to meet him a year or two ago, which was awesome.
Oh, nice.
Though that all changed, I still admire George Lucas for doing it his way. That's really what I'm trying to do. All the stories I hear about George Lucas battling the system in Hollywood are so crazy and outlandish. The fees that would be levied against him for doing things just slightly different in his stuff, tearing up his Directors Guild card, never looking back, and moving his facility outside of Hollywood, just saying, fuck you. He really is the wealthiest independent filmmaker ever. The Star Wars films ostensibly are independent films. Yeah. They really are. He just happens to have a lot of money. So I still admire him for that, although I don't really care for a lot of what he's done since the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But you know what? That's fine. Not everything I make is going to be fucking cool either. I'm going to make a big piece of shit someday. It's going to happen.
No boobs in it.
You have to give yourself permission. Well, I don't know. You could make a shitty booby movie. Yeah, now there's a fetish.
Oh, there you go.
Do you ever think that you're overly critical of yourself?
Oh, absolutely I am, yeah.
My
teachers would tell me that in high school.
I noticed that I don't know that many directors. I'm not trying to be like the incredible name dropper. Well, I was talking to George Lucas the other day, but I was talking to a friend who's a director, and he showed me his work print. The movie's been out, and he's been sitting on it because he's like, oh, this movie sucks. I was in a bad period. It was horrible, you know, and I was okay. And I said, I'm honest with you. It's not great, but it's not as bad as you think. It's an okay movie, and people are going to watch it. And there's a couple of scenes in there that when word gets out, oh my God, this happens, more people are going to watch it. And I told him, try to tell him honestly what I thought the flaws were with it. But I said, you know, it's not bad. And I said, you know, stop beating yourself up. And I said something about it. And he started, and I'm like, you know, you take my line to him was, you take a compliment like a punch to the gut sometimes.
Yeah.
Nice about your film, and you're like, well, you know, I was trying to do this and I got stuck and I had to do it. I'm like, dude, just like I said something nice about your movie, say thank you, accept it, don't beat yourself up on it.
You know, I wish a lot more people though would be a little bit like him though, because your first couple of movies aren't going to be very good. They're not going to really be anything worth showing to a large audience that you don't know, you know. So I made a ton of movies. I probably made 12 movies that no one knows about. Because I was never proud enough of them to show them to people or to release them in any way. And plus it was before technology was very good. So they look like home videos, but I would show them to friends and I would show them to family. And I remember I had that exact same response. I did a movie called The Day Joe Left. It was 45 minutes long. I showed it to some friends and they were like, eh. And I was like, well, this isn't, if your friends are going, eh, it's not bad. I like this and I don't like that. It's not worth marketing. It's not worth using a lot of time, effort, and money to push something like that. It wasn't until I was like, okay, this is worth pushing. I'm going to spend $2,000 and enter a bunch of film festivals for this one. But not my first one. My God, I would have just been flushing $2,000 down the toilet. So I do think filmmakers should have that. They need to give themselves permission to make student films.
Yeah.
So even if you don't go to college to make them, your first several are probably student films. Show them to people, get feedback, but don't expect to like get a distribution deal right out of the gate.
There's a lot of stuff on Amazon Prime that has no business being there. And I know some filmmakers who think they're craving after one film. And because their film is on Amazon Prime, oh my God, I'm this huge success.
Guys are such guys. It's so weird to me that I was never into sports, but there are a lot of filmmakers that act like jocks still because it's for them, it's a lot about the size of their camera rig and it's about whether they can claim to have that distribution deal. And it's just, there's so much bravado and swagger involved with a lot of them that usually when I see that kind of behavior, I'm like, well, their movies probably aren't going to be very good and they usually aren't. So I'm not saying it's always the case, but it's usually the quiet bastard that doesn't care about that shit that's probably making the more interesting movie.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
John?
Yeah.
Anything else? We've been on for a little bit.
We have been on for a little bit, and 3 o'clock my time. Scott, you're in Indiana, correct?
Yep. That's 3 here too.
Okay. So Alan, you are as always the odd man out. Alan.
I don't care.
Okay, though, because he's got boobs on the other side of that wall.
Yay!
Tear down that wall, Alan.
I'm just waiting for VR to get a little bit better, then I will never have to leave my home and never have to interact with another human.
Man, that's true. I'm serious. That could really do it for me, too, I think. If we could get VR gets to working, I might just say fuck it, because this world fucking sucks.
And hey, living in Alabama. Lately,
my God. Alabama?
Living in Alabama, yeah. God, yeah.
Jeez. It's bad enough.
Apologize to my neighbors, not really.
You know, Scott, were you just getting ready to say, and I thought living in Indiana was bad?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I wasn't going to go there because I didn't want to offend you. Dear old friend of mine lives actually in Bloomington. And
Bloomington's great.
Cute little towns. There are. But wow, it was just kind of, I don't want to say desolate because it's, well, I don't know. It was different when I was there for the visit. Let's just put it that way. But no, we definitely want to thank you. I think we've definitely taken up enough of your time.
That's fun. I appreciate it.
Well, we really appreciate you taking the time. Anytime you want to come join us again, update us, tell us whatever's going on. And we will definitely, I'll get with you later on and we'll get a link posted up for you. We'll definitely help you out with pushing Found on there.
Yeah, I'll drop it on my websites too. I've got websites that I probably don't even remember I have that I can put it on.
I appreciate it, guys.
I had like 3 hits, so you know, maybe you'll get lucky and get another hit.
Every little hit helps, man. I've got like 1,000 copies of Space Babes behind me right now, so buy away, everybody.
One of them will be mine.
Cool.
All right, guys. This is John and Alan signing out. Mr. Scott Shermer has joined us today. We definitely want to thank him and thank you guys for tuning in. And we will hopefully talk to and see you guys soon. So until
Grandma,
then.
Grandma, if you're watching, I've got your $20 and I'll get it to you soon.
You just don't want to know for what, Scott. Don't even bother with that one. Trust me.
Okay.
All right. Scott, any last words for us?
BanditMotionPictures.com. Go there and buy stuff.
There you go.
There you go. All right, you guys. We are out. Scott Shermer, thank you, buddy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. You too.